We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. Also, you can find this show on the RotoGrinders Daily Fantasy Football feed. This is the Gilcast. I'm Davis Maddock. I'm joined by Nate Noling and not Sammy Reed, because despite Sammy having played DFS for a decade now, and you know, traveling, he did not realize that Nevada was a state where you cannot register for DFS contests. So we are instead joined by Jordan Cooper, Mr. Blender HD, who went 3 for 3 on his predictions on what was going to happen on tonight's show.
Well, it was pretty easy when I could see all of your lineups. Yeah,
Sammy's a total fish. What I mean, seriously, this is a total fish move. I mean, he knows. And then he wakes up Sunday morning and is like, what the heck?
It's really unbelievable.
When you DM me and you ask me Diggs or Barkley, and I'm like, okay, I know pretty much what team you're going to play. And like, I think me and Nate, I didn't change my team from last night. I went in with the Sammy attitude.
I want all alphas. Either.
I don't want to deal with these cheap Richie James, Khalif Raymonds, that types of stuff.
Here's the thing, though. You guys escaped the blade because Khalif Raymond played in the 15th highest scoring game in NFL history, was minimum salary, ran all the routes out of the slot. I mean, you guys escaped the blade.
But he didn't. Did you not watch the game? The only reason he ran routes out of the slot was because Cephus got hurt. Tom Kennedy was who you thought Khalif Raymond was.
I'm gonna keep it 100 with you guys. Tom Kennedy did not enter into my thought experience because this guy, I do projections, so I have to know who Tom Kennedy is. He has been in the NFL for, like, if you had to guess how old Tom Kennedy is, I mean, he's been on the Detroit Lions since 2019. Like, these guys been on the team for 4 years and has just done, I mean, nothing. He has 6 receptions in his NFL career and just shows up today to own the Khalif Raymond bros.
I think you got lucky with Khalif. I think Khalif was bad. I mean, Khalif was bad.
He could have gotten 0 and my team still would have been fine. But I mean, that's because okay, let's just go ahead and get into it. Blender comes in, wins the 3-man. I mean, just, you love to see it. Comes in from the outside. Takes us forever to figure out the three man had to send these guys invites via email because Nate couldn't find Blender, and then, you know, we can't find Nate's email. Well, obviously no one can find Nate because it's just Nate N. There's a million Nate N's. So Blender scores 189.92. He plays Josh Allen, Jamal Williams, Khalil Herbert, Deontay Johnson, Brandon Cooks, Tyler Lockett, TJ Hawkinson, Josh Jacobs, and the Titans defense. Nate played the exact same team with the Steelers defense. And then I played.
Well, he
Josh
played
Allen.
The. Well, hold on. He played
not the same
Josh
team.
Reynolds over Cooks. So basically, he paid up for the Steelers and went down to Josh Reynolds.
I mean, just one of the. And we'll get to that. We are going to absolutely rake him over the coals for this. Don't you worry, everybody. Then I scored 161.62. Josh Allen, Jamal Williams, Khalil Herbert, Deontay Johnson, Cooks. And then our big difference was our 2v2 was I played Khalif Raymond and Saquon Barkley instead of 2 5K plays, right? So instead of Josh Reynolds, Josh Jacobs, or Blender, yours was Josh Jacobs. Who?
Well, Blender paid
down. I have Lockett, and you don't have Lockett.
Yes. Yeah, but I had this. I had the salary for Lockett. I just played Deontay straight up over Lockett, which feels bad.
Deontay was more than Lockett.
But I had the salary in my lineup to choose either, and I chose poorly. I mean, that's just like the of all the reasons why it's annoying for Sammy to not be here. Chalk Deontay week where Deontay absolutely sucks ass. Just really unfortunate to not have Sammy here for that.
The Deontay thing was unfortunate. I was like, I really wasn't struggling between Deontay and Lockett. I was struggling between Lockett and Cooks.
Same.
That was my. I
thought Deontay was a lock.
I actually like. I'm not going to roast you over playing Deontay over Lockett. I think that Deontay is. Yeah, I think Deontay is like $500, $600 underpriced in this spot where I think that Lockett was a good value, but I thought Deontay was just a better play straight up here. I do think Lockett Cooks was close, and I almost went Cooks, even though projections like leaned Lockett just because Cooks is the brand. I had to play Cooks, but I didn't.
I don't even know how Blender, I mean, what do you even do? Do you just run a blended optimal and click optimize and that's it? And you just don't even think about it?
It turns out this was it. Like, I didn't have to make the choice that you guys were making because I just said, why not just play all? I don't have to make a choice. I'm just going to play all three of them. Based on the Saturday night blended optimal from five different sites, this was the optimal. I hand-built this before I even clicked the button because I said, how do I not play Khalif Raymond? I don't mind Josh Reynolds, but of course, he's 4,600. I don't want to play Mariota. I don't want to play Geno Smith. Like, give me Allen.
These people playing, I saw some Mariota. I saw some Geno Smith teams out there. And, I mean, look, good for you, the Geno team. I mean, he ended up scoring more than Josh Allen. But you are just so playing with fire with these Mariota. I mean, even Goff, right? People are going to play Goff and cash a bunch for the rest of the year after seeing these games. And I cannot do it, man.
Mariota was 22% owned in the $100 double up.
Call an ambulance for the people who played Marcus Mariota in cash.
Yeah, Mariota was rough. I actually was excited about Josh Reynolds. I thought that Josh Reynolds was the only wide receiver on the team that actually has a legitimate, that's an actual legitimate NFL talent. I thought he would be running the high value routes. And I thought they were going to move the ball still, even with Amon-Ra. I mean, the whole team was out, but he's the only one that was a legitimate wide receiver. I mean, I'm not playing Khalif Raymond. I'm not playing Tom Kennedy. I'm not playing Cephas. I thought Reynolds was like a really.
What
good
if
player.
I told you that Khalif Raymond had more yards and more touchdowns and a greater yards per reception than Josh Reynolds last season? What if I told you that? Would that change?
What if I told you that Khalif Raymond is like a 5'7", like 175-pound, like
that's
slot.
Those are the guys we want. These are the guys we want on DraftKings.com. You catch a ball, you fall down, you get a point and a half, and then you just do that 10 more times.
But Josh Reynolds legit runs like high value routes and like, I mean, he was.
This is just the fucking Mac Hollins thing all over again. Josh Reynolds is just a career a total empty calories guy. Been in the NFL since 2017. Never been any good. Always bad yards per target. Like,
I thought Josh Reynolds was by far. I mean, like, I look at Nate's team and I could have easily played. Like, if I weren't going to play my team, I would have played his team. The only difference is that I feel I'll be like Sammy. I feel like a fish paying up for defense. Like Steelers defense, it's like $3,600. Can I use that money elsewhere?
There was no need to pay up for defense this week because the best defensive options were all cheap.
Well, who did you play defense, Davis?
Nate Steelers deep. I played your Chicago Bears against Danny Dimes. I got 6 points. Nate, yeah. You do this. This is actually I'm noticing a leak in your game. Is sometimes when you don't know what to do, you'll just pay $3,400 for a defense just because. I know better that spot. You totally, I know better Josh Reynolds' expensive D over, like, Blender's lineup in a vacuum is way better than yours.
Well, yeah, probably. But I don't know. I wasn't going to not play Josh Reynolds. Like,
this is an absurd, absurd thing to say.
Dude, in this... Like, you know Jared Goff is going to pass the ball. You know they're going to move on this Seattle defense. The Seattle defense is awful. This was
Nate,
the only game.
What if I told you there were multiple instances of Josh Reynolds being a starting wide receiver with Jared Goff when they were members of the Los Angeles Rams with Sean McVay as his head coach, and he did nothing? What if I told you that? Would you be interested in that?
Nate, I have a question
Davis,
for you.
I mean, you're literally talking about the second highest team total on the slate, the best wide receiver running routes, high value routes, not crappy routes out of the slot, but high value, like anything with a decent touchdown expectation, it's going to go to him. He's going to get high A dot
well,
throws.
It actually, in the highest team total game. It all went to TJ Hawkinson, actually.
Well, yeah, I didn't see that coming, but I also played TJ, so it's fine. But at the end of the day, like, Detroit was literally the second highest team total on the slate. And it, like, you have the wide receiver that you know is going to be the only one that is an NFL talent and can win at the point of catch. And I, like, he was 4,600.
Oh, my God. Nate,
if
Nate
Price
dropping
wasn't
point
an
of
option,
catch.
Nate, if Price, let's say, let's ask this question. And I can understand if you're going to side with Josh Reynolds, fine. If Price wasn't an option, who would you, if I, didn't matter. Would you rather have on this slate Josh Reynolds or Brandon Cooks? Price
Cooks.
Didn't matter.
I mean, Cooks.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's then Cooks. Who cares about defense? Play the defense against Matt Ryan. Who cares?
Yeah. And I mean, also, you guys just exaggerated the Raymond thing. He saw 5 targets. Like, it was fine.
Because there was an injury and allowed him to play snaps from the slot.
Quintus Cephas, like, Kennedy... would not have played the whole game in the slot. Raymond had been the slot guy before.
What I was watching on Red Zone, I did not see. I thought Khalif Raymond was going to be the slot guy, but he was not until the injury.
I mean, that is.
But I'm not going to. I'm not going to claim I watched this whole game.
I guess my thing I did not have a degree of confidence that Josh Reynolds was the best play on the slate. But I did. I mean, it was like Blender. I mean. It was interesting that the Lions team total really didn't move when Shark Swift and Amon-Ra St. Brown were out like that. I was expecting it because this was a week we saw a huge movement in totals. You know, the Ravens total went down. I think the total in Jacksonville, Philadelphia dropped 6 points and the Seahawks Lions didn't move.
But the thing about Raymond that. We're playing cash games. I look at Raymond, and I'm not saying he's bad. I mean, I could have played your lot. Like, I look at your lineup, and I go, absolutely viable. But especially in wide receiver positions in this day and age of the NFL, if it was 2017, I'd say that about running backs. But now in wide receivers,
yeah,
I look at
that's
that.
That's a fair point.
Raymond has in his a good portion of his range of outcomes is a
zero.
Single digit, or no, I'm not even saying a zero. I'm talking about 3, 6. Look at Richie James. He put a 0.9. If it wasn't for this Lions value, it's quite possible Richie James would have been the cheap receiver. If Renfro wasn't out, Hollins would have been gone, and people would have played Richie James in a lowest team total game on an offense that has no, like, Richie James's role doesn't change. And of course, 25% of people played Richie James in the double ups.
I saw Richie James team Actually, I had a Richie James team save for most of the week, but Raymond was, I mean, nope. Like once Shark was out, it was like no brainer. You were playing a Detroit wide receiver. You had to.
I did it.
Something happened with Richie James. I don't know what. I don't like. He was only out there. I think in the first half he ran like four routes.
Well, I mean, the whole Giants. It was just all the. Well, he fumbled. He lost a fumble.
Davis, all I could hear in my head when I built the team with Reynolds or Raymond, I just heard Sammy's voice in my head. I heard Sammy's voice.
But he was, like, but the Sammy voice Swift, in your head was
Swift
wrong.
Swift is out. Amon-Ra St. Brown is out. And this show, I'll turn on this show Monday morning, and all three of you guys would have lost. And it's like the Lions put up 10 points, and it's like we played – three Lions in cash with Jared.
Yeah, but
Goff
turns out we should have played like five Lions in cash.
Turns out the Lions are in the best offensive game like environment on the slate outside of Buffalo and Baltimore. Like,
well, except that wasn't even because the weather was horrible there, and
was still the highest.
I mean, I would say like, I mean, do either of you, after seeing the weather and how it impacted that game, did either of you feel bad about playing Josh Allen? But it's like, I don't really know what I would have done because I would not have played Mariota. I just didn't even consider ever playing anyone other than Josh Allen.
Did you, Davis, consider playing Diggs? Because I thought,
yeah,
I did not consider Diggs at all. Literally at all.
I mean, I had Diggs.
I would have played Davante Adams over Diggs.
Well, I don't have my projections up right now. I bet I had Diggs as the highest projected player as the slate. But even if I didn't, even if I had Adams projected higher, and if it was close, I would probably just play Diggs because I had Allen.
No, but if you take a look, I like my team without Diggs, because if you take a look at the construction, if any Diggs team, like if you tried to build an Allen Diggs team, you were conceding somewhere. You probably couldn't have Barkley in your lineup for sure, and you probably still needed a cheap wide receiver. And then on the Barkley teams, like, the fact that I played Josh Allen is like, well, against those Diggs teams, if Diggs goes off, like, I'm getting those points from Allen also, and I don't have to worry about Barkley in those lineups either, because Diggs-Barkley's lineups would have, like, Mariota in it, and that did badly. So, I viewed
the only way to do Diggs-Barkley was a lineup that would have just been fucking horrible, which would have been Richie James and Khalif Raymond, and then you would have played
and
Diggs.
Probably Mariota. Was tight this week. You would not have been able to play Allen, Barkley, and Diggs, and had a decent team. Like you would have.
I think
to give
it also team. It also wouldn't have been Hockenson at tight end. You would have had to have played someone cheaper at tight end. So, honestly, I do like Hockenson was like I think 40% owned the massive $50 double up, and I do, in a way, like, I do feel kind of bad for people who didn't play him. Because, like, that's a 1v1, and you, I mean, your day was just done. You were just...
If you played Njoku,
if you played whoever, I mean, it was he was the Will Fuller, Matt Collins, Christian Kirk, where it's like, that dude just has 45, and everyone you're playing against has him, and you're just dead.
Did you consider, like, to me, I viewed cash going into it, as the three players preloaded into my lineup were Jamal Williams, Khalil Herbert, and TJ Hockenson. Everything else could be debated, but like those three guys weren't going to move out.
I didn't think Josh Allen could really be debated, and I didn't really think Deontay could be debated.
I'm pretty similar there.
I had Deontay as our number one value on Daily Roto.
Yeah, I think Deontay was like $600 underpriced here.
Yeah. I think Cardi had him as the second highest projected wide receiver on DraftKings.
I mean, he's been getting a ton of volume. Like, he
was getting Amon-Ra St. Brown volume. He had 7 straight games with a 30% target share, double-digit targets every game this season, yada, yada. I mean,
all 3 games he's had double-digit targets. What I didn't take into account was that he sucks and plays for the Steelers.
Yeah.
Why are we burying a lead here? Why haven't we started the dunk fest on why Davis did not play the West Coast Barkley?
Seriously, Davis, why wouldn't you take Josh Jacobs at 5,500 in this spot? Like,
because
you literally
think Jacobs is bad.
Like, you're still stuck in like this weird 2020.
He gets 30 touches a game for 5,500. What are you kidding me?
It's like, no, he still does. Who do you think is getting the workload in this game? Are you scared of Zamir White?
I just liked Barkley, but I mean, Barkley's the high scoring player in fantasy.
$2,500 more expensive though.
Yeah, but I had Khalif Raymond. Oh. I mean, what do I need to sweat it for when I had 12 guaranteed points coming in from Khalif Raymond? I mean, you guys getting the fucking career game from Josh Jacobs. I mean, if I set the line as like what price would I get you to bet on this was Josh Jacobs's highest career PPR points he'll ever have?
We beat you by 28 points. He didn't even need that much.
Yeah, I mean, I could have taken a zero at the position and still beaten you, Davis.
Well, you guys, I mean, you got me on both sides of the 2v2 because whatever, Reynolds scored more than Raymond and Lockett scored more than Raymond and Jacobs just straight up outscored Barkley. So yeah. What can you do?
I mean, Jacobs is like...
Barkley can do the same thing as Hawkinson. We're like, if 40% of your opponents have him, and
Jacobs can also. Why can't you come to the realization that in the past four games, Jacobs gets the same workload as Saquon Barkley? He's not as explosive. Yes, I get it. We'll talk about spark stores, whatever. You could say he's horrible. Well, but I mean, in this offense, he's getting 25 to 30 touches, which includes 5 to 7 targets.
Well, Barkley. If we're just making stuff up, before this game, he had not played more than 72% of the snaps. He had only one game with more than one target. He had not had more than 19 touches in a game. Barkley's had more than 19 touches in every game. He has not been below 83% of snaps in any game. He has had at least 4 targets in every game. Like, they're not comparable.
But he's $2,500 cheaper.
Right, and he's Blender, a $2,500 cheaper
player. When you can pay $3,000 more for a guy in the lowest game total on the slate that you can't guarantee is even going to see 25 offensive plays, you got to do it. You got to jam that in. You got to jam that in. Davis,
why did you play? What people were going to play there? There were people today that were going to play Herbert, James, and Barkley in the lineup. I'm like, what are you people doing?
You're going to see a total of 20 plays. Like, I mean, literally. I've watched enough Bears games in this season to know, like, Saquon at this price, even with the workload, with the game projection the way it is, I was not that scared of him.
How many touches do you think Saquon had today, if you had to guess?
28.
He saw 35 touches. Most interactions of any player on the slate. He had 160 scrimmage yards. So we got 22 without a touchdown. I mean, you guys honestly ran hot to not get completely buried. Like you guys should have gotten I honestly didn't realize his workload was that big. Like, you guys should have gotten absolutely.
How
smashed.
Many passing plays did they run? 20?
The Giants ran, well, Daniel Jones got hurt. So they only ran 17 passing plays. The Bears ran 31 passing plays. They're high
Davis,
on the season.
Davis Barkley could have gotten 3 touchdowns. We still would have beaten you.
That isn't accurate. that's wrong.
Yeah, well, look, you lost by
27 points.
I was coming into this ready to give you guys the benefit of the doubt, but then looking at the Jacobs stuff, it actually made me more confident I was right.
Yeah, but you had to play Khalif Raymond in order to do it.
Hey, I mean, you know, sometimes you live and you die by the Khalif Raymond and you get what you get.
Khalif Raymond was bad. I actually think he ran good.
Well, I don't think that. I mean, my two contentions would be is you guys are overrating a 1 week spike in Josh Jacobs' passing game usage because he had had 2 targets before that game that they were losing against Tennessee. They were never losing this game against Denver. I don't believe they trailed on the clock at all. And I just was as obvious because the data from the last year when these guys all played together showed is Raymond was more productive than Reynolds. So it seemed better to take the more productive player for.
Did you at least play him on FanDuel Cash, Davis? Did you play him in FanDuel Cash at least?
So funny you asked, Blender. I actually like today's slate enough to deposit a little bit of money over on FanDuel. And I felt I had a pretty strong angle today in tournaments that obviously I didn't just play all the chalk, so I didn't win anything. Let's see. I did not. I played Josh Palmer as my cheap wide receiver on FanDuel. Didn't get there.
Why'd you play a cheap wide receiver at all on FanDuel?
Because I double stacked Justin Herbert.
You're playing GPP. I'm talking about cash games.
Yeah, no cash on FanDuel. I can't do the cash games on FanDuel. All right.
I should have gone with Cooks over Lockett.
Yeah, I mean, you're a fraud.
I can't believe I didn't.
I mean, Nate, last week, Sammy and I are just castigating you. Like, can't believe you played this guy. He's so you were like, no, I'm right. And then he's in a better spot this week, and you don't play him.
I really should have, just for the brand. I mean, I can't believe I didn't.
I mean, we told you for the brand. Before Lock, we were like, dude, you got to do it.
That was really the only thing I was sweating. I think I've had this team since like Saturday at like noon. The only thing I was sweating all day was like Lockett versus Cooks.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Yeah. All right, let's do tournaments. I'll just, I have this terrible, terrible team.
I don't want to pull mine up.
Yeah, I mean, so I did not, because I'm only playing single entry and three max, I did not play any of Jamal Williams and play TJ Hockenson. So none of my teams made any money. But I did actually really like this team that I played. My angle was Justin Herbert double sacks. I was like, he's gonna be Herbert's going to be leverage on the Detroit-Seattle game. He's going to be leverage on the, you know, on Hurts, Lamar, and Josh Allen, yada, yada. Justin Herbert, 9% owned, gets 24. AJ Dillon, 4% owned, he gets 9. Rashad Penny, 25% owned, gets 31. Mike Williams, 22. Amari Cooper, I did not have Amari Cooper projected for 18% ownership. I would not have played him. Would not have played him in this team if I did. Josh Palmer did nothing. Darren Waller did nothing. Rondale Moore did nothing. And then I played the Packers defense, who also did nothing. Rondale was the play I thought was going to be super sneaky because he was just going to play the Dortch role, and Dortch didn't play at all. I think Dortch only got one target, and the Dortch role had been really good, but it turns out Rondale might just be bad, and Dortch might just be better than him. I mean, did you guys see when he got tackled on the third and long? I mean, the defender just reached an arm out and just sat him down. I mean, he is the smallest guy. He's got to be the smallest dude in the NFL.
I have so much hope for Rondale. I just can't. It's the first time I've seen him on the field.
Best spot for him.
What's up with you and small guys? You're playing Rondale. You're playing Khalif Raymond. I mean,
because these guys are good on DraftKings Blender. They uniquely benefit from the scoring system.
Let's look at the wide receivers at Smash today. Mike Williams, CeeDee Lamb.
CeeDee's a smaller guy. CeeDee's only like 195.
That was my biggest struggle with CeeDee, is I didn't think he would win when he wasn't in the slot.
A lot of people who've been having the CeeDee Lamb's not a real number one wide receiver takes are having a tough time. Well, I mean, I don't know, Blender, what did you think about the Herbert double stack?
I was over on Herbert. If I were to, I played 10 single entry 3-max lineups, as well as 100 large field lineups. But had I been allowed in, like, we need the one lineup for this show or whatever, my top lineup that I would have made was Hurts, Devonta Smith, Dallas Goedert with a Christian Kirk run back, then Rashad Penny, Josh Jacobs at the running back spots, Josh Palmer and CeeDee Lamb. Josh Palmer in the wide receiver, CeeDee Lamb in the flex.
Were you Cardinals surprised defense. At how owned Penny was?
I was just about to say that.
I was shocked.
So I also had Penny in my team. So I also did a Herbert double stack. I went Herbert, Williams, and Palmer, unfortunately, with a Nico Collins bring back. And then I went Michael Carter, Rashad Penny, CeeDee Lamb, Mark Andrews, and Bears D. Penny's ownership shocked me.
No, it didn't shock me. I knew he would be much higher than was owned because, first off, if you're trying to make those types of teams, so two reasons. Remember, I'm the ownership guru. The two reasons is that if you try to make expensive stacks like those types of stacks or even build stacks, you need you need someone that's even cheaper than Josh Jacobs in your lineup. And Penny projected the best out of any running back under 5,500.
He was literally 5% less owned than Jamal Williams was. That is shocking to me.
Because in order to make those types of lines, and also he was the leverage play du jour. If you listen to any GPP show the past 3 days,
yeah, he was don't play Jamal Williams, play Rashad Penny.
Right, and you're getting leverage off of Lockett and leverage off the Lions receivers like that. Like it gets steamed up like that. I didn't mind. I mean, but I knew that the ownership was going to be.
I had him for single digit from pretty much like I pull ownership from a couple different places. And everywhere had him projected for single digit ownership. So to see him,
I personally projected him in large field at 16%.
In a bunch like the red zone in the spy, he was above 20%.
I mean, he was 9.5 in the that's the double up. I just want to take a look at large field, 13.9 the milli.
I mean, that's really high. That's really high for a guy who is counted as a leverage play, but it's not going to be good for a points per dollar play.
I mean, in the red zone, you literally had, what was it? He was the third highest owned running back. I mean, it was Khalil Herbert at 43, Jamal Williams at 32, and Rashad Penny was 27%. That's insane to me that I would not have guessed he was the third highest owned running back.
I think I know why, because people are mentally weak and don't want to play Josh Jacobs at 5,500.
Well, if I would have known, Josh Jacobs would have been, what was he owned in this?
He was 6% owned in the milli.
I mean, you guys are going to get so burnt treating Josh Jacobs. Like he's
No, because he's going to go up to 7K. We're not going to play him anymore.
I mean, okay. My immediate thought when the cards flipped over and I saw a penny at that was just like, DFS has so jumped the goddamn shark that he and Jamal Williams, who were projected literally like 10 points apart, could be that close in ownership is just, I mean, this is like, you know, this is
that. Amari Cooper at 19% in the milli, that's a little bit egregious.
I mean, how did that even happen?
Because I think the reason is that if you're going to play the Mariota stack is very easy because there's no one else other than you're playing London and Pitts in that lineup. And then because you're using the tight end spot, like you're not playing Njoku in a double tight end construction. Who's playing Donovan Peoples-Jones? They're playing Amari Cooper. So I think a lot of this Cooper ownership, and I'll call it get recency bias or whatever. I didn't expect them to be 19% owned, but I mean, that's a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah. Also, apparently Rashad White just fumbled, which is so bad for my bags. So bad for my bags on a day that Alberto literally played one snap. Okay. I mean, probably the bigger conversation we need to have is like, I mean, this, it just sucks to obviously to get beat by teams with such a high cumulative ownership, right? I mean, it's not very fun. But I mean, I've been talking about this with Brian Hooper a lot. It's like astrology versus heuristics, you know? I'm sitting here, you know, douchebag fantasy football tout, like, well, I actually did think Jamal Williams was fine at his ownership, but I did not think Josh Reynolds and Hockenson were fine at their ownership. Like, 25% owned TJ Hockenson ends in tears, like such a huge percentage of the time. So Blender, what's your astrology take here?
My astrology take?
Well, just your criticism of the astrology bros such as myself. Well, because I'm not running Sims. You know, I'm not calculating.
I'm not doing that either, but I'm not even doing that either. But I'm trying to construct lineups that I don't mind eating chalk. I don't view players. See, that's the thing. I don't view players as good chalk or bad chalk. I just view them as these are their projected outcomes. And how do I not play chalky players in combination with one another? So like I had less of than the field of Jamal Williams. I was over on Eckler. I was over on Taylor. That didn't work out.
Man,
it's
Jonathan
not about
Taylor.
Being over
Jonathan
or under.
Taylor.
It's just that how do I play these lineups in different constructions? So like, a lot of my penny lineups had Jonathan Taylor in them and not Stephon Diggs, right? And a Josh Allen stack.
But your penny lineups, knowing that you are flipping over a lineup with Penny that's 5% less owned than Jamal Williams and you're giving up 10 points of projection, that's bad. Like, if I would have known Penny and Jamal Williams were that close in ownership, I never would have played Penny. Like, Penny was an objectively bad play at his inflated ownership.
No, it's not.
You're giving up like 10 points of projection.
No, that has nothing to do. It has to do with the distribution of outcomes between the other players in the game. So in a outcome where if you go by Rashad Penny's, now this is a 93 point game. So obviously we're talking about a very big, you know, the two standard deviation outlier. But if we put Penny's 80th percentile outcome at like maybe 24 points, like it's most likely coming out of Lockett, out of Metcalf, out of Geno Smith, and out of the game in the whole. So like Penny, even at 16% ownership, if everyone else in the game wasn't owned that much, I'd agree with you. I'd say like in and of itself, but you have to factor in how many lineups does his points take out of other people's lineups. And because it was taking out, since that game was so owned in general, in combination, I'm like, either I'm going to play the players in combination, I'm going to play a 3+1, a 3+2, or I'm just going to play Penny or just going to play Jamal Williams. And I'm just hoping for an outcome where the production sides on one person's favor and everyone else gets knocked out. In other games, you like you couldn't say that about like Stephon Diggs, for instance.
Yeah, because he's not taking away from that many other guys who are that.
Right. Right. So it's, yeah, like I don't care about his ownership, like, because if he was 26% owned, like, dude, Diggs has a 40-point ceiling. Like, I don't care about the ownership at that point.
Well, turns out Rashad Penny also has a 40-point ceiling.
Except it comes at 30% ownership.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. I getting beat in tournaments today with a bunch of people with Hockenson teams doesn't really bother me. I think more often than not, it's minus EV to play guys that are 20%.
Well, I'm thinking more in terms of like the combos. Like when you know that a guy you're playing is also going to be owned by 30% of your opponents, they're also going to be really deep into other combos that you can't even begin to calculate that can beat you. I'm not even saying you're wrong, Blender. But what I like, my general thought would be, I think honestly, yours is a more complicated way to view it and harder to build lineups. Even, well, I don't know if it's harder, but just a different way to do it. Whereas more what I'm thinking is, I'm just trying to embrace chaos in general. Like, I would just like, I just, in, whether that be in-game injury or bad weather that we are not expecting, or just coaches are bad, or a guy has a bad day, or there's just a bad game that wasn't expected to be. Like, I just would prefer to have less of the field on similar combos.
Yeah, but the less of the field doesn't matter if the lineups aren't good. Like, I understand the Hawk cheap tight end. If you were to fade the cheap tight end chalk over the course of 5 years,
yeah,
you're probably ahead. Now, Hockenson, in the scope of a Seattle-Detroit game lineup, like, my attitude with the cheap tight end chalk is that if you're playing Goff or Smith, or you're playing Lockett or Metcalf on the other side of that game, like, I think that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, you
Hockenson
got to play
as
him.
A one-off with no one else in that game and playing the, like, dude, you, if Hockenson has a big game, what's going to end up happening is that you're going to have Brandon Cooks in your lineup, while your opponent with Hockenson has DK Metcalf and Geno Smith in his lineup. So you're much better off with that cheap tight end chalk, just stacking as part of it rather than play it by itself. That's why I don't want to play like cheap. I don't want to play cheap chalk, but I don't want to play chalk Josh Reynolds as a one-off. No, I want to play him with Lockett or Metcalf or with a stack or, like, that's kind of what I'm saying. So it's a matter of the full lineup construction, because once you start stacking, you start reducing the amount of combinations and lineups that you're playing against. And you go off
that's
and
true.
you play
but then
a
you're placing off. You're placing more emphasis on your one-offs, which is just a harder way to win tournaments. I mean, it's harder to win. It is you're
it's
having
like
to
playing
get
more parlays. Like you're reducing
no, but you're not doing
the overall
one-offs.
Field that you're playing against, but you are like increasing the leverage on your one-offs. So like your one-offs have to like.
Let me I'm looking right now. I'm gonna show you which. Okay, you tell me. I'm looking at the Millie. Okay, so we're talking about large field. Tell me the highest combinational ownership of two players in one lineup. So what two players had the most percentage of lineups that had both of them in them?
Lockett and Jamal.
Not even close.
You're or Jamal even... and Herbert?
Nope.
Okay.
It's
I would say Williams and probably Williams and Hawk.
Herbert and Richie James, 3.4% of all lineups in the Millie. Herbert plus
some tout got out of control with Richie James. Someone was out of control with Richie
okay,
James.
Okay, but
this
number
morning.
Number two is Barkley and Herbert, which are running backs that are opposing each other. Which
yeah, okay. So
I'm not
I have
a big
I,
fan of.
So I want to take umbrage with this, because I think you can, as someone who plays in a lot of the contests I play in, I think you can make a lot of the wrong conclusions from studying data from the Millionaire Maker, where one, it's a lot of people who are playing bad. And two, a lot of people who are doing things that you like, people who are running 150s, like the stuff that like Whistles Go Woo and Brian and these people are doing, are like so far above my understanding. Like, it doesn't even have anything to do with football. It's all math and correlation matrices and simulations and stuff that like I don't even want to try and understand what those guys are doing, because it's just going to mess me up.
Yeah, but that's what I'm doing.
I'm not saying you're wrong or that you're playing bad. I'm just like I don't think that's true.
No, but the general point is that when you say if I would have told you like Hockenson, for instance, in the Millie, so large field, 19.9% owned, like in a vacuum, if you didn't tell me the rest of the lineup or anything like that, you go, should you be playing cheap tight end chalk at like 20% owned on a 12 game slate? In a large field contest, it's the easiest way to find leverage, because the guy could easily get single digit or three or something. Yes, I get that. Now, once you start adding people, because you know, when you play Hockenson as a one-off, you're competing against 19.9% of lineups right now. Once you add Jared Goff at what? Let me take a look at Detroit's ownership. Jared Goff was 3.6% owned. Okay, once you add then Josh Reynolds, who's 11% owned. You have to. How many lineups have all three?
So you're
and
saying,
then you add Metcalf, and then you have even less lineups.
So something that's convoluted about what you're saying is you make it. So you're saying like it's a really small percentage, and it is. But then you're talking about to get first place, which is what we care about. It's really all that matters in these contests. You are quite literally flipping coins with 50 other teams, 100 other teams, 200 other teams. if all of these high percentage players are hitting, and that's a really tough way.
They're not high percentage players. There's 200,000 people in the milli. I'm only competing against 50 lineups. Isn't that wonderful? I'll go. You know what I'll do? I'll play Josh Palmer. What is he
on? I would actually rather know what percentage are they owned of the top 200 players, because I don't really care about all these lineups that are not even scoring above 100 points. So even like your ownership percentages that you're building your models off of are diluted based on these floor lineups that you're not competing against. You can just take those out. So really what you want to know is like, what is the ownership percentage of this that you're going to get a differentiation versus the top 200 lineups? Because that's ultimately going to determine your actual expected value of like tournaments, you know, and that's part of the problem with most of these ownership projections is you're looking at like a massive field where it's like, we just need to exclude half, like more than half, 80% of those lineups. And that's where your ownership projections would get way more squished and way more like high leverage, where your differentiation in ownership could be the difference between, you know, a first place finish and a 15th place finish. And that's where it's like, those are huge differences.
Like I agree with you, Nate. I guarantee you that there are some Hockenson lineups with Goff at the bottom of the Millie Maker that have Amon-Ra St. Brown with an injured tag in them also. Like
yeah,
there are, and also there's a lot of min cash, like people's cash lineups thrown in. So it's like they have min cash equity, but you're not competing against them for first place in the Millie Maker. So once you start narrowing this down, people get so obsessed with this individual player ownership, and it's like, well, you could play Chalk Hockenson in a Seattle stack, you know, a Geno Smith, Lockett, Metcalf, Hockenson, but maybe in that lineup you're not playing Khalil Herbert. Like you're now that lineup you're playing 6% owned Josh Jacobs and 8% owned Damian Pierce.
This is my question, Blender. So do you think that people who are playing in the contest that I like the spy, the red zone, you know, these big single entry contests on DraftKings, do you think we are being too chalk averse? Do you think we're being a little bit too precious, just saying we don't want to play 30% owned Rashad Penny? We are playing no Jamal Williams, not even considering playing Jamal Williams. Do you think that is an overreaction?
Yes, I think that I think it's fish to think in terms of individual players. If you're playing Josh Allen if you're playing a chalk stack, don't play. Probably you're going to have to find a way to get lower ownership somewhere. Where you get it is a different story. Dude, I played some lineups that had Mitch Trubisky, Claypool, Freiermuth, and a Garrett Wilson run back. Like those lineups had Jamal Williams in it. Like I need to raise my projection because I'm playing a Steelers stack, which is awful. Right. And
so that would be a combination where I would totally play Jamal Williams.
Right. But that's the point that I'm making. So we're not starting there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I'm not a good GPP player. I just like when I look at it, I'm like, I'm not playing Khalil Herbert at 30% owned or Jamal Williams at 30% and Hockenson at 30%. I'm just not.
Yeah. But Nate, the question to ask is not that. The question is, let's say, Nate, I gave you a lineup that already had eight players in it, right? It already had eight players in it. And I told you that its projection was X. And I told you already that you have low enough ownership to win the Millie Maker. And you had to slot in the last player. Wouldn't you want to take the highest projected player right there? Because you already have would you want a lower projected player, or would you just want to play the higher projected player if I give you that situation?
Well, at that point, I would take the highest projection.
Well, that's the point that I'm making. So it's like you don't have to play a lineup with a cumulative ownership of 20%. Like that's nuts because your projection is going to be so low. But once you're at a certain level, once you're playing Trubisky at 1% and Claypool at 1% and Freiermuth at 4%, like if that's the winning stack, how many lineups am I really competing against? That if I play Jamal Williams in that lineup, if I play even Jamal Williams and Khalil Herbert in that lineup, like, dude, that lineup with those three players and the run back of Garrett Wilson, I'm dropping like 15 points of projection on an average lineup. I need to raise that somehow. And because I'm already competing against so few lineups to begin with, why wouldn't I want the highest projected, you know, points in my lineup. I'm already good. If that stat comes in, I win $1 million. Like I'm good. Yeah. Just give me the most projected points.
Well, and also, I mean, I think there's another way to look at the Rashad Penny thing in particular, which is like the field is kind of flattening their ownerships. Like, you know, they're not going like 3 years ago, Jamal Williams would have been 60% and Penny would have been 8% instead of 40, 30, you know? So it's like you can kind of level yourself and you could maybe even make the argument that people are playing a little bit suboptimally and not just jamming the best plays as much.
But Richard James will still be 10% owned for whatever reason.
I mean, I cannot believe you guys faded 35 Saquon Barkley touches and lived to tell the tale. All right, we're going to get out of here.
Not just lived to tell the tale, won by 30 points.
Well, you know.
We won by it. If you played Saquon Barkley twice, we still won.
I have never lost in a game where I didn't run bad. Right. If luck was not involved, I'd never lose. All right, boys, we're getting out of here. Jordan, thank you for hopping on the show. Nate, thank you. We will see if Sammy can remember if he's in a state where he's legally allowed to register for daily fantasy sports contests next week. Later, everybody.